everybody. It's Christine McDaniel with another episode of the Co-Living Code, bringing you operators from around the world to talk about why they started their concept, how they started it, what their thoughts are and feelings are about co-living in general. Just some really great conversations that I've been lucky enough to have kind of behind the scenes with people, and now wanted to bring them weekly for you guys because it's just really cool to talk to these people, and you'll see why. Next on this show, we have Naz. He actually came to America from Turkey at the age of 17. He pursued a dual career in design marketing and as an artist musician. He founded the musical group PUI and toured over 23 cities globally, even including sold out shows in New York City, venues like the Irving Plaza. He did this without a major record label as an artist and entrepreneur by building an event production company and developing a passionate fan based community. And we'll have a link to that so you can kind of check out all of his previous life. And we're going to talk a little bit about it too on that. And then following that impactful experience in social entrepreneurship and community building, he then consulted with startups, specifically creator platforms and social networks for human-centric growth marketing. We'll dive into that too. All of that experience, you know, has helped him kind of bring that in with a community of minded outcomes, and that's deepened, right, by doing that. Co-living in the mechanics of real estate is such a process that he knows creates a great opportunity for developing systems that are rewarding to the stakeholders, including all the investors, the landlords, the residents, the community, like just tying all of that together, which we've talked about on this show individually. Lastly, he's passionate about self-growth. He's currently studying an integrative approach to psychotherapy, neuroscience, and Tibetan Buddhism at the Nalanda Institute of Contemplative Science. Sorry, hopefully I said that right. He brings this attitude to his living spaces, his community. He's the founder of Origin Co-Living, which is in Brooklyn, New York. And so there we go. He's all about, you know, fulfilling a vision for, you know, living a way that can improve people's lives across the board. So Naz, there's your intro. So excited to have you on. So let's get into it. So you were a musician. Do you still perform?
Yeah, I was singing before we started the interview to just kind of get my vibe going.
Okay, to get your voice going for the interview?
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Okay, cool. And you perform with your band still?
I don't perform with my band still. I think after, you know, coming to America, being, you know, a part of that experience just was very, very profound for me. And it was, you know, career shaping and mind shaping, just life perspective shaping in so many different ways that, you know, I felt like I wanted to take a few years break and then regather my energies, start a co-living space, and then we'll have something coming up soon.
Cool. And you guys started your space, which you're sitting at, and it's beautiful there in Brooklyn. You guys started in 2016, correct?
Yes, 2016.
Okay.
Wow, it's been a while, huh? It's like 2 years-ish. Yeah, something like that.
Okay. And do you live in, how many locations do you guys have total?
So we have two locations now, both in Brooklyn. And yeah, I live in the first one, and it's many different pathways led me to do this. One is the one I think you mentioned, you know, a band and building, you know, forming a connection with people that enabled us to kind of share our art at a high platform and without a label, just kind of like with the power of the people, so to speak. And that kind of turned me on to community-minded outcomes of building things, systems. And of course, you know, the mechanics of real estate and co-living play really nicely with that. But at the time as well, like before we started, I had an Airbnb business like years ago before anyone knew anything about it. I was kind of like, when it first started, I put two and two together really fast. I thought, okay, I'd see what could happen here. And then also After that ended, it was just kind of like a time where I felt like, in my own words, I think back in 2016, Manhattan started to feel like, that's where I was living, like an open air mall or something like that. And you know, really, I appreciate living close to urban centers with all this and that, but and I've lived in New York for years, but at the same time, I really felt like I owed myself a better living experience for so many, I feel like all of us who come to these big cities and live here for years, you know, downgrade our living standards to kind of be here. You know, we really do. You get better opportunities and all that, but in terms of like specific to housing, we really have to downgrade our standards. And I really felt like at that time, you know what, I was kind of going to be a rebel about this. How can I elevate my living standard to equal to or even better than, you know, where, you know, I came from, like as a kid or something like that. But so that all of those things converged really nicely. I guess I could have gone with my living situation a different way, but I kind of felt the call to adventure to say, wow, there's an opportunity to build something here. I'm going to kind of do this from the inside out, see it happening in like the mechanics of like the space coming together with people, coming together with the ethos, the application communication. It's just kind of like life coming to life. And I love seeing that. So I really felt like it was an opportunity to do that. And I'm glad I did. Yeah. So
I love that. And then where did you find those originals? So let's go back to when you're like, okay, this is what I want to build. That original core group of people that moved in with you, like how did you find them? Did you know them already?
Some of them I knew. Yeah, you could say like-minded kind of people. And you know, at the time, really, I didn't have an exact idea of how this was going to go. And soon enough, you figure out something that a lot of people and a lot of co-living companies and us too, we have this idea of community. The concept of community and the reality of community are very different things. And, you know, in the concept of community, I think we think about like our identity groups or like interest groups or things like this, or like, I'm going to be with like entrepreneurs, or I'm going to be with like creatives. And that just sounds like a really good idea, you know, and it does. And you're like, whoa. And then you see someone's resume, they send you their LinkedIn page. You're like, oh my God, this is like blockchain, AI, entrepreneurship, creativity. You know, it's like, that sounds really cool. But you know, you realize, oh, what I really care about is someone who keeps the, you know, toilet clean or like the dishes washed and considerate and cares about the experience of others in a living space. And that has nothing to do with what they like. And it's got nothing to do with their career. And I feel like we learned that or kind of gravitated towards that learning early on and started directing origin towards more of values-oriented space rather than interest-based or this kind of thing. And I think most people feel like they want to live with like-minded people. Look, I don't want to tell you what you think, but you probably want to live with like-valued people, you know, not like-minded people. Because you can have different, I guess, like values for different contexts in which community can come together. For example, a co-working space. It makes sense that the values are hustle, you know, do something, all this kind of thing. Yeah, it's like working, you're creating something. It makes sense in a co-working space. Or, you know, in like, I don't know, in a celebration context, in Burning Man, yes, it makes sense that one of the things would be radical self-expression. But when I'm sharing a bathroom with you and our time is not only limited to 1 week, I don't know how radical I want you to express yourself in there, you know? The values shift. They shift with context, and living is kind of, I think, where really rubber meets the road of human interaction. And that's one of the things that I am most passionate about, is creating a system and its consequence is coexistential harmony. That's the most important thing to us, most important thing. That comes first. So home first, values first, and hey, you know, if we have some similar interests and can form a company or start a project or something like that, that's cool. I'd love for that to happen in origin, and it does, interestingly enough, but it's not what we focus on. So I am.
No, I love everything you said. You're like a philosopher of co-living. This is great. And I did what I should have started by saying, you've been, so how many times have you been to Burning Man?
I've never been at Burning Man. So I actually,
you've never been?
No, I think you're talking about some pictures that are floating around in social media land. That was from another festival called Further Future.
Okay. Is it a similar festival?
It's in some ways, yes. In some ways, not, you know, Burning Man, it's not a festival, so they say, because, you know, if people create the experience, I think that's the heart of it. But Further Future was more like a product. It was a very well done product, I thought. So, you know, it's like all it was all branded and this and that. So.
Yeah. And no, and that's part of your background. That's your, right? That you've studied is marketing. No, because what you said about like, okay, you're right. And I've never heard that term, like values. There's like-minded, living with like-minded people. We've heard that a million times. But you're right. When it comes to living with somebody, you're better off that their values are the same as yours, not so much just like-minded, but like-minded values, maybe could be a term. You're exactly right. And I've yet to hear that from anybody yet. So that was very profound.
Oh, cool. I think also people, co-living is like a newer term, newish term.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
As many of the great people who've been on the show have mentioned, people have been living together for, you know, since we've been people. But it's like a trend, you know, we just call it co-living. It's just, yes, there are some specific things to it that I guess like make it co-living. But, you know, it really doesn't mean anything at the end of the day. You know, we're sharing space with people, but and there's so many different things that manifests itself all the way from like full-fledged intentional communities. You know, you have like Osho in one hand, and then you have like, you know, fully branded hospitality experience on the other hand, and anything and everything in between. So, but I think most people who like put forth their concept with the branding of co-living, like this entrepreneurship things. And I think like most of us are like, and have been like as an industry kind of jumping on a bandwagon of just like, and you always do that when there's a new industry like blockchain and this and that. But like, it's like, whoa, branding fiesta, like word porn. We do that. You know, but then there's the truth of things. You're living with people. You want people who are going to suitably, reasonably, you know, are ready to show that consideration to others' living space. I mean, and it's a hard thing to market too. That's why I guess it's, we don't market it, because, you know, how do you say that in the website, or like how do you like put it in a catchy phrase or something? I mean, we're looking for humans.
No, and that is like, how do you, you know, with two homes right now, like how do you, is it always word of mouth? Like how are you guys bringing in new residents, and how long do they stay on average?
The average stay hasn't, you know, long. Our preference is long because it gives us time to build those interrelationalities between people that, you know, result in coexistential harmony, because, you know, it takes time, of course. It begins with marketing. Of course, you put a certain image out there, you put some messaging out there, it gets picked up by a certain type of people's radar, and then those type of, like, there's also already like a kind of a funnel thing going on. And when we meet people, what we look for are very subtle things. It's how they communicate. It's how they write the email. Are they being transactional, or are they kind of coming in with an appreciative spirit of like what it is they're getting into and they're excited to do it? And, you know, these seem like things that, you know, how do you define that? But, you know, we all know. You want to look for it, you'll see. And I think these kind of small things are really good first initiators of like how people are approaching the situation. Are they looking for a crash pad, or, are they looking for something that's more long-term, more home, and, you know, that kind of mindset? And that tendency in people is what we most try to identify. And of course, we communicate it too. You know, it's not like we try to do that and not tell them anything. We tell them what we're doing, and of course, see how that resonates with them, what they give back to us. You know, some, you know, people can say, hey, oh yeah, cool. So let me see the room again. Or, oh, cool. You know, that's the thing. You know when someone is just clicked.
So. Do you personally vet the people coming in, or do you have other team members help?
It's both. And in the beginning, it's been that I've had my eyes on everything. But yeah, it's both. I also am very aware of the need for multiple different perspectives in trying to assess someone's energetic or, you know, life perspective suitability for our environment. And I never trust my own perspective just by itself, especially in like such a qualitative thing. I want multiple points of view. And also the housemates and the community which lives in the homes as well. You know, if there are multiple people interested, let's say in an accommodation, we'll ask people, hey, these people are interested, and for us, both of them are cool, and what do you think? So let's pick the one you feel like you want to be your housemate. So like that.
And then when you said, so is it a minimum 1 month? Like, what's the minimum somebody could live there for? 3 months?
Yeah, our lease structures, you know, this has also been like quite a journey in constructing custom-made leases and just kind of navigating the complex world of New York City real estate. But we have some really awesome leases, I have to say. Anyway, but it allows from as short as month to as long as whatever. But the only reason we do that is so that we don't tie ourselves up in a situation where we get stuck with a mutual not non-fit and then have to live with that for a year. So the only reason we have the ability for a short term is so that we can validate the long-term fit.
Perfect. That was my next question. Have you ever had to ask somebody to move out?
No.
Oh, okay. No.
Yeah, I think that initial process, the funnel, you know.
It works.
It works. It really works.
Obviously, if you've never had it. And then do you guys usually run a waiting list? Do you run, like, how are you guys pretty full all the time? Or do you have a waiting list?
We're pretty full most of the time, and waiting lists is, you know, waiting lists are tricky because when someone really needs a space, it's like,
I know,
they're gonna find a space.
Yeah.
So the people are on our email list. Certainly we have some sort of cultural reach and you know, people in like related circles and things, but so we'll spread the word to them. If they don't need space, they'll maybe know someone who needs space, and yeah, like that. So we have an interested ear list.
Yeah, there you go. Not a waiting list, interested ear. That's a good way to put it. We have one of those lists too, and a waiting list, which is weird because sometimes they're able to move, like wait to move, and then so they'll hold it out and then try to move in. But
right.
Awesome. And then what was another? So how many people do you have in each home?
So we've been focusing on this kind of architecturally remarkable townhomes in Brooklyn. And yeah, they look like this. So,
that's so nice.
Okay. But 7-8 people average per home. So we tried to create a kind of an adult house sharing experience where really people's space feels like almost they have like their own apartment in like a mansion kind of a vibe. So yeah, 7-8 in like 4 floors. That's been a really good number. And yeah, and
that's awesome. No, that's great. That's a good, it's similar to our model, right? So it's like they have each have their own bedroom. It's a big, huge house. There's not a lot of people in it. And people are willing to pay more of a, you know, it's more expensive, obviously. There's more of a premium, but they're willing to pay that. Yeah. Hey. It's going to make sense, right? And then, so what's your favorite part of operating your co-living concept, being their origin, living there, operating it? Sleeping, eating, breathing it.
My favorite part is
I like
seeing reality respond to qualitative like design. So what does that mean? Like for me, what I see co-living as an opportunity to practice as like a person is, can we design coexistential harmony? Because for me, it's a very fulfilling experience to create a functional unit in society. So whenever either our values or the systems in which we apply and live out our values, whenever those bear fruit, that's just incredible. And, you know, we also have very functional ways of doing those things too. You know, we have a very specific onboarding process. We make those things a ceremony. We make those things a kind of a emotional imprinting moment of like, kind of like having the people acknowledge what it is we're doing here. And for me and for us, I think co-living is a practice, you know, it's a living practice. It's something you do, you know? And so that's the most fulfilling aspect of it to me. And some of the more functional ways that we do that is, for example, we'll have challenges. Like we have self-improvement challenges. We had a 5 a.m. Wake up meditation yoga sadhana challenge for 30 days, 40 days back to back. And I participated in this too, so it was quite something. But what we'd do is wake up at 5 a.m. and go downstairs. We'd go down there actually, like light candles up and things like that. And then we'd like meditate and kind of just get the energy ready for the day and like, you know, visualize, like goal set. It's just by the time anybody else is awake, it's like poof, we have fire coming out of our eyes. And I just love that because, you know, if living here can make somebody's life like better outside, that's an amazing thing. And that's been one of my favorite things. I guess like if we have to qualitatively define ourselves in any way, you know, look, this is what Origin is about, is that kind of self-improvement, you know, thing is like an applied, programming that's been going on. And we actually had we had a thing to kind of ensure that accountability. We would each deposit $200. And then if we failed to wake up any one of the mornings, a portion, a correlating portion of that $200 would go towards an organization that we disagreed with.
We've done those challenges. I love that. Did anybody fail?
I woke up every day, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, but I like you guys did it again. You guys are doing this group. So it's so funny. Our house does house challenges. We have for years. But the 5 a.m., sometimes it's like right now, ours is more, it's called morning and evening routine. So each of us individually made our own morning routine. You know, maybe it's meditation, journaling, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. We have to commit to ourselves what it is. We told the group. And then that's February's challenge right now. So we're each doing that individually. But I like yours was like a really like you guys come together. I mean, there's major accountability. Because it's like if they're not there at 5 a.m., then you know they didn't wake up in time.
Yeah, your least favorite political organization just got $15. Thanks to you.
There you go. No, you're right. You're right. Oh my God, that's so funny. And so let's back up a little bit. I love what you said. You said you guys do an actual ceremony on the resident onboarding. So a new resident comes into your home. And again, you know, same with us. It's this very, you know, it's tightly knit community. You're bringing an outsider in. You want to include them as quickly and easily as possible so they feel like a part of the tribe. Like, what does this ceremony consist of that you guys do?
So we'll go through our values and things like that. And, you know, we actually have that built into a digital product where they could also engage with a sequential series of screens and things like that when they agree with certain things. So it's like some tech built into it, but it's just kind of talking about some of the things, some of the values. And we have that very sequentialized and just kind of like, we open it up with more qualitative things, and then we'll talk about the functional things, and then we'll just wrap it in context. So something like that.
Oh, so that's before they even get there. They're already getting that part of it before they arrive, or as soon as they arrive?
The way we communicate is also very specific, and we always make sure that our communication involves a kind of overview of the past and like what's coming up next. So we don't do the ceremony to someone who hasn't moved in or is not moving in, but we'll let them know that that's a thing that's going to be happening. So, you know, people aren't caught off guard, and we'll also contextualize that in terms of like the marketing kind of backtracking when they first see that piece of note that thing is going to happen. We say, you know, we care about, you know, long-term home values, this and that. So, you know.
So it's more tangible. Do you guys meet at the house like once a week, once a month? Do you guys collectively meet together?
I wouldn't say it's on a schedule just because it's been our experience that, you know, people have wildly different schedules. Some people will just like go travel, this and that, work and everything. So sometimes we get together. Sometimes we get together outside the house. And sometimes we even like put together like events outside the house and do things outside the house. And sometimes we'll have like a barbecue. Sometimes we'll have dinner. Sometimes we'll go to like a spa or something. So it's in terms of that social aspect of it, it's very natural. It's as natural as like, you know, the flow of our lives go. So we didn't want that to be something that interfered with people's normal flow of life, except when we know people are going to be here, which is the night and the morning, like you kind of have those accountability frameworks, because we know people are going to be here in the morning, you know, if they're here. So it makes sense to do the morning meditation thing and then just go do whatever else you're doing the rest of the day.
That's awesome. And then one last thing I love that you talked about, and that is your favorite part, is this shifting the dynamics of people living together collectively, shifting the dynamics of what life, normal, you know, white picket fence. And again, you're right. I see this magic happen, and it's just like, it's out of nowhere. It's at an evening, you know, it's a Monday night, and all the housemates are coming home from work, or they're coming into the kitchen, and like, they're laughing and they're high-fiving, and they're we're making jokes. Some of them are talking about their dating. Some of them are talking about work. But I think back and I'm like, wow, like this isn't what life the traditional nuclear family. It's like the dad comes home and he's stressed out and he's annoyed. The mom, you know, like there isn't this harmony that I've seen sometimes with the normal way people are living, which is interesting. So this is total, like, I don't know if it's a culture shift or like, and maybe it's just I'm in this bubble now that this is all I know. But when I do hang out with my married friends, it's a totally different every single time. You know, it's like, who's going to feed the dog? You need to do this. You need to do that. It's like a weird, but in our house, it's like super fun. So like, again, I don't know if it's just a, it's just what we've created, the magic we've created and we're lucky to live in, or just a shift. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think there's so many factors that contribute into that. That is why co-living is a thing nowadays. And there's so many factors, you know, it's like every little thing contributes, you know, Airbnb contributed to our perspective shift in home and strangers. The prices of living in a city contributed to our shift of perspective in the non-stigma of living with roommates. You know, now that age limit or like kind of you're successful, not successful, well, you have to live with everything. That's gone. It's kind of like dating apps, you know. For like when it came out, it was kind of like, but now it's like the thing, right? And there are multiple factors that contribute to co-living being that way. And, you know, take it from all the way from relationships to, trends in housing, to even general trends in like workplace shift, you know, the need. Residential real estate use case is, I think commercial real estate is losing some use case percentile to residential real estate because of the possibility to work remotely and things like that. So like the setup of the home is much more specific. Like now we ask each other, oh, does it have a co-working space? I mean, 20 years ago, what is that called? Go to work, you know, wake up, go to work. So all these things. And also, I would say at a really, are also, I think for good reasons and bad reasons, in society, the adult maturation timeline is shifted, like, to 50.
I think you're right.
My parents, I look back now and I feel like we all have the similar experience where you look back and your parents, it was like, you know, their grandparents, their parents, like wartime or like a house, business, practice. By the time they were 21, like three kids. And then here we have like kind of the majority of the population, especially in places like New York, LA, people are, you know, 40, 45. They're like, yeah, you know, I don't know my taste in dating yet, but that's cool. It's just, it is what it is. I'm saying that real estate is a thing that serves people. So it's going to serve the use case specific needs of human beings, and we're reshifting so much. So I think
that's
a good way to capture that shift.
No, and you've nailed it. This is such a great interview. I'm so glad we're doing this. Like, we're just diving into, like, you know, the use case and what's happened over time and these new generations. And like, it's a total shift. And it's been, you're exactly right. You know, my parents were in their early 20s already with two kids, a mortgage, a dog. Like, it's so different. To where I'm like, and you're right, the roommates, you know, I remember only 5 years ago, like, you would not, people would look down on you if you were like, oh, I live with roommates, you know, I'm in my 30s, I live with roommates. Now it's like, nobody even cares. It's like, right on. Like, no, every actually it would be more rare if they didn't have roommates. Like, well, why don't you have roommates? Like, do not get along with people.
What's wrong with you? I feel like the dream was American Psycho, you know, and now it's like Black Panther.
Yeah, there we go, right?
Community, prosperous, and I feel like that's like the thing, like that's the collective ideal now. I mean, it's just also an hypothesis. I'm just thinking out loud now. But, you know, we've shifted in these dramatic ways.
No, and it's fun. And it's fun because people, again, and you're from Europe originally, but, you know, people can see, you know, the show. It's nice we talk to people from around the world because there's different perspectives. You know, and this is like, you know, you're on one side of the United States. I'm on the other side of the United States. And we're seeing this every day in big cities like LA, without a doubt. Our neighborhood, I should do like a video blog of the neighbors that walk by our house. We live in the most, like, it is super, you know, suburbia. Our beautiful, and again, these were the McMansions that everybody had to buy when it was two people. They buy a 5,000 square foot house.
Exactly.
Don't go in that living room. It's off limits. Hey, let's have four extra bedrooms for who knows what.
Yeah.
You know, when we have guests, they never have parties.
And the governor comes over.
Like, yeah, it is like, so that's our neighborhood, right? So, and, but then we converted this huge garage in this beautiful co-working space and we put the doors up and the neighbors walk their dogs by and they're like peering in and sometimes we invite them in and we've had neighborhood gatherings to try to explain what we're doing because these are homes that have been, these are people who have lived in their homes for 25 years and they watch five, you know, adults moving in and they're like, what are they doing? So we have a wine and cheese. We bring them over. Let's, you know, let me explain the concept of co-living. So you guys see what we're doing in real life and you can ask questions because it's very a unique fit in a suburbia neighborhood where it's one house. But again, and they really were open to it, you know, in Los Angeles, they thought it was really neat. And we didn't get those stairs anymore, you know, after, that's why we have the party right when we move in. We have to have the gathering within a week because then there's whispers amongst everybody in Suburbiaville. But it's cool. I'm super excited. I love where humanity is going with this.
I think also like you'll see institutional investors are into this now. It's like co-living is becoming asset class. And I think in terms of the future of what co-living is, I think co-living as a term, my opinion is that it's here to stay because it captures a really good qualitative way to describe this confluence of multiple things, you know, that are not exactly well described as being a roommate, that are not as exactly well described as being like a multi-whatever housing complex. It's like co-living is good. That's good branding, I think. So in that sense, and the conversations we used to have like with these landlords and trying to have these build these partnerships and then like going on like business development, you know, conversations. It's like, at first, no one knew what we were talking about. Now people are, developers are reaching out to our company, just, hey, you wanna operate this skyscraper? It's like, no, that's not how it works. It's just people hear, like the word's gotten out is what I'm saying. Is like, they're so familiar with it. They'll just like wanna turn everything.
I get those calls every week. I'm like, yeah, they're like, do you want to be the operator of this building? And I'm like, okay, it's a lot more than that. You know, it's community. It's, I'm like, we're good. We're good. So it sounds like with you, I mean, and you're in New York, you're in one of the toughest real estate markets there are out here.
Yeah. Yeah. And real estate. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And, in that sense, I actually, one of the things I like about co-living, I'm kind of back to your question. I like it when to see people's faces and just kind of be in that space of experience with them when they realize this is sane. This is kind. This is humane. This is, yeah, you know, it's so different than the traditional experience people used to having also. It's just, you know, I see people pleased and I see them happy. That makes me happy. You know, they're like, it's tough in places like New York and for operators too. Yeah. The conversations with developers and things like that, you know, they're still New York City developers. Yeah. You also kind of do this language shift. I don't know if you're you're doing that. You know, you're describing the same basic truth to the residents in like completely different language. And then you just kind of switch that truth back here. You're just talking to a developer completely just bottom line, percentages, numbers, business terminology, the language just shifts. But you know, we're having to do that a lot, which is like quite fun. I'm like, wow, I'm talking about the same thing, but they're responding to that. It's cool. I'll use that word. You know, you use the language of whatever country or localities you go to. They get you, so it's good.
Same note, and people can watch previous episodes of this show and they can see the verbiage I have to use when I'm speaking with a real estate developer, an investor versus a co-living operator versus a resident. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. And I mean, you know, they're numbers guys. They need to hear the numbers. They want the bottom line.
Right. You know,
yeah. And but it's exciting to see this become an asset class. I do have friends that are in banking that do funding for multi-unit huge complexes. And yeah, that's why in LA you're seeing co-living, they're building these massive projects, maybe 800 units. Well, they're only slicing like 100 off for co-living because it's still a risky, what they consider risk, because they don't have enough history. So in finance, they're always basing their stuff off history, rightfully so, and there's not enough history. So that's what they're doing right now. It's interesting to try to mix co-living into a regular multi-unit complex. I don't know how that's going to work. Only time will tell. But yeah, the banking is still a little bit behind, like kind of dipping their toe in, which is good. Hey, but you're right. Yeah,
looking to get a loan or something when they describe like what the space is going to be used for. Yeah, we have that conversations a lot too with kind of the loan originators and things like that. They can be tough on co-living.
Yeah. And then you change the verbiage a little bit, right?
Exactly, when it's described that way. So.
Got it. Well, oh my gosh, this is great. I think I got two more questions for you. I love the direction that this is.
I was so scared it was over.
No, it's not over, but it's almost over. I'm watching the time because I do have another call, another interview. So let's see here. What technology? So again, you know, we're building Kindred, which is the platform for the entire industry. You know, it's how do we take this humanity and how do we take, you know, this amazing human connection and 5 a.m., you know, but how do we use tech to power that, to make it more efficient, to hold people accountable if they're not in person? What is technology or software like you're currently using?
First of all, it's a great idea what you're doing, you know, so really. We're kind of using it, giving it a run. It's a need now. Maybe not so much a little before, a few years not before, but I think now it's definitely a need. So what we do is we just create a mosaic of third-party services that accomplish what it is we need to accomplish at like a reasonable amount of cost and efficiency. It works, but I would say my biggest dislike about that setup is the branding aspect of it, and not being able to give people an end-to-end holistic experience or a digital product. And we're working on aspects of a digital product as well, but it's just, when is it worth to actually pay the team, like make the investment to build it for two properties? Maybe not yet, but so for now it's just third-party services. That
a mosaic of third-party applications. I love it. I love that verbiage. I'm going to steal that because we were using 11 different software applications to power two homes. I don't even like it. Again, they were great and it was making it more efficient, but it's like they don't talk to each other. I'm like 11 applications, a mosaic of applications. Why can't it be one? The technology's there. So, right. Yeah.
And when they don't talk to each other, that's also frustrating too. You know, it's like you do as much as possible with like, you know.
All of them, yeah. Trello, Google Apps, like all
of all of that.
We're all hacking together the same apps, pretty much. Everybody in this industry. Uh-huh. So
we're like Slack too.
Yeah.
No.
No, for sure. So, perfect. And then last, my favorite question that I ask everybody is, where do you see the future? I know we touched a little bit through the conversation on it, but where do you think, see co-living going in the future? Like if you went 10 years out.
I think I have this vision sometimes, just not necessarily like a personal vision that I'm going to do it, or maybe I will, I don't know, or we will, or that society will. But I do think that we are leading towards a place where the, first of all, co-living industry is going to grow. I think exactly in the terminology, you know, co-living, it's going to be called that. I think it's going to grow. I think that's going to stay. And I think the arms will, you know, extend, and the roots will extend deeper, both in finance, real estate, and also culturally. So I think those things are going to feed each other. And I think that's going to affect the build. You know, I think it's going to become a conversation with the build of cities of the future. I think it's going to go as far as, you know, affecting some aspect of city planning. I think so. Like in a long enough timeline that I think, yeah, that's what I see. I see it growing. That's from kind of like a functional observation standpoint, from just kind of like a fantasy vision standpoint. I see it being like, you know, just these futuristic cities that are, you know, like different community structures. It's like almost like a, you know, futuristic tribe of sorts. You know, that's why I liked using the example of Black Panther. I'm like, yeah, like human culture, that level of technology and just services and just, you know, technology for the betterment of us. You know, I think co-living could create environments like that. And yeah, I think companies are going to play a big role in obviously capturing and like defining the culture that goes into each space, which is tricky. I don't know how much you want a corporation to kind of define the culture. And like, I feel like culture in and itself in a time where the general narrative is dissolving. So I think micro narratives are becoming attractive to, very attractive to people, a sense of belonging in like a micro narrative kind of sense. And I think these urban tribes are going to be able to provide people that, but we'll see. That's just,
Urban tribes, man. I'm like taking, do you guys see me? Okay, on the podcast, you're not going to see me, but I'm literally like taking notes of some of your terminology, like urban tribes. That's exactly, because everybody's flocking to these big cities, which I love, but then they are going to have to redesign. What do the buildings look like? How are they going to house these people? How are, and I think everybody kind of siloed off in the, like the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and now everybody's becoming like tribes again. They're finding, you know, finding their tribe, similar values, and you know, living again together, like they did back in the caveman days. Finally, we're coming full circle. It just took us humans a while to do that, right?
Yeah, and I think it's like done well. It's super healthy. It's just like we said, that's what's giving rise to this industry, is a confluence of many different influences that are really beneficial and useful to like all the stakeholders and participants. It's kind of duh, yeah.
Duh. Awesome. Well, Nas, that's a perfect place to end. Thank you so much for your time. We will love to have you on again in the future. Absolutely. And if you're ever in LA, come visit. I'll do the same next time I'm in New York.
Sounds great. We would love to host you for a tea or something. I'd love to come see your space. And thank you very much for having me. And also thank you very much for what you're doing for the co-living industry and just kind of like bringing together a macro tribe of micro tribe operators. I really enjoy it. Thank you.
No, you're so welcome. Thank you. Bye.